My name is Brooke Bryan. It is December 7th, 2011, and I am in the home of Juanita, here to talk about her life and work as a quilt maker. Juanita, can you tell me your full name?
I am Juanita Harris, or Juanita Shockey Harris. My maiden name was Shockey. I was born in Ravenwood, West Virginia, out in the country. And I lived in West Virginia all my life until I was married. Except 2 years, we moved to Ohio and lived in Ohio. And that was my seventh and eighth grade. I went to country school. And my birthday is the 9th, the 20th, and 1922 is when I was born.
What are some of your earliest memories that you can think of? Do you remember what your home was like as a child? Do you remember what the landscape was like around your home, one of the homes you lived in?
Well, my father worked for people, or else worked on a farm. And he had horses. He done all his work with horses. We had our own chickens and cows and pigs. We bought very few groceries. And Daddy would go to town, and he always brought us a little sack of candy, probably a dime's worth of candy. But that was a nice size sack then. And we lived in just different places. We lived, I remember two places we lived. We lived in, he done farm work. I was born in the afternoon. He'd just come from out in the field and was putting the horses away. My mother went out to the clothes line to call him that she was in labor, that a baby was a coming, and it was me, and I was born in the afternoon.
You had siblings?
I had one sister. And so, I don't know. I think my aunt, her sister, come when I was being born, because I was born in the country. Daddy went and got the doctor, or went and the doctor come when I was born. I remember that house, and I don't remember, but my sister was a little bit jealous of me because Mom put me in the baby bed that we had, and went. I think she hung clothes up stairs in the wintertime to dry, and she heard me crying, and she come down to see what the problem was. My sister had bit my finger because she was a little jealous of the baby, got too much attention. And my mother's talked about that a lot.
Did you have any farm chores as a child?
We had to go shut the chickens up after we moved to another place where we had lots of chickens and sold eggs. And it was our job to go down and shut the chickens up of evening. And I was a little bit afraid because it was beginning to get dark. We washed dishes after I got a little bigger. Us two girls washed dishes. Well, before that, we had another baby brother. We had a baby brother. And when we lived at this house where the chickens was, we had two brothers. One baby was born, the last one. So I had a sister and two brothers. And it was a nice size family, my mother and my daddy.
And was your grandmother around a lot in your childhood?
My grandmother was there, but they were old. They didn't come to our house as much as we went to their house. And we had a horse and buggy, so we went in the horse and buggy to Grandma's about every Sunday. And I don't know why we went so much. And we always had dinner there. And we went to church. They went to church. You know, we always went to church all our lives. And we went to Daddy's side of the family some, but not quite as much as we did at Mother's side of the family.
And your mother's mother, your grandmother, was a quilt maker?
Yes, she piece quilts. She quilted. I don't know when she started so much quilting, but they used to knot quilts. And I don't remember her until my grandpa died, and she lived with us for several years. And that was her job. She quilted, she pieced quilts, and that gave her something to do. And she always washed the dishes. That was her job. After a meal, she wanted to do something, so she washed the dishes. Well, we would dry the dishes, you know. And it was good having her there. And she would tell us stories about things that happened when she was young. We always liked their stories, and my grandpa would sit and tell stories, and we would sit down in front of him and let him tell us stories. And it was just an interesting life. We didn't have radio, we didn't have television, we didn't have games to play except maybe checkers or domino or something like that. And
so the feed sack quilt that you have, your grandmother pieced that?
She pieced it, the feed sack quilt, and it is mostly all feed sacks. But we didn't have money to buy pieces. Daddy didn't make very much money back then, so we just used what we had. She had save every little scrap she had and use it. That's the reason the pieces are so small. We had made other things out of the rest of the quilt and after the rest of the out of the rest of the sack. And
so how would the feed sacks come? What were they like when they got there, and what would you do?
Well, we got them after we lived where we fed a lot of chickens. And they were mainly chicken feed sacks that we bought chicken feed in. And we would wash them and then pick out. Well, we made dresses out of them, too.
How big were they?
They were a 100-pound sack. What would hold 100 pounds of feed. So they was pretty good-sized sacks, you know, and it'd take it would take 2 to 3 to make a dress. Just depends on how full you made it, you know. If it was just kind of a little plain dress, 2 would do it.
So your grandmother quilted, and she probably sewed clothes as well?
She didn't sew as much back then when she lived with us, but she always sewed, and my mother made her clothes. She always made her clothes.
And your mother made your clothes too, probably.
Sure, she made our clothes out of sacks or material. She'd order before school started in the fall. She'd usually order material and make us 2 or 3 new dresses to wear to school.
Were there patterns that she used? How did she know how to fit you?
I think she cut part of her, just made her patterns, some of them. But later on, she bought patterns, and she made a lot of her clothes.
And some of those clothes, some of your grandmother and mother's dresses are in the quilts that you have.
Mm-hmm. So it's nice to look back at the quilts and see the dresses and things that we had made out of the material.
So when you were young, quilting was kind of a community function?
It was a community, yes. My mother, well, I was in school, but my mother joined the Ladies' Aid. That was a church organization. And so they would have their monthly meeting, and they usually had a quilting in the summertime to work on. Well, they always did at our house. I suppose they did a lot at the other houses. You know, they would meet at different houses, and they would have dinner. It was usually an all-day meeting. They would come 10 or so and have dinner, and then they'd quilt in the afternoon. And I don't know what they'd done with the quilts, whether they sold the quilts or whether they was for someone that was having the meeting and it was their quilt. I don't know. I wasn't there all the time, just once in a while when they met at our house. So
they would put those quilts on frames?
Just, well, like my frame now. That's where my frame pattern come from. I asked my mother, could I have her frame that Grandpa Shockey had made for her? She didn't have a framer. She borrowed grandmother's or something, and she needed a frame. And he said, well, Grandpa Shockey made her a frame and gave it to her, and she used it. And then it was nicer than the first one. I still have her frame up in the garage. Anyway, my pattern come from, she gave me her frame, and it wasn't as big, as long. Wouldn't quilt as big a quilt back then as mine would quilt. I don't know. They only had single beds then, just a regular bed, not a queen size bed or a king bed or nothing like that. So they didn't need as big a quilt. So the ones that they made were smaller than mine. And my husband said, after I brought her frame from down there, he said one morning, it was after I'd retired, do you want to go in the garage and work on making some quilting frames? And I said, well, yes. So we worked all day on my frames. And we took the pattern from their pattern and only made it a little different, a little bigger. And so I'm awful proud of my frames. He'd saw it out and then we'd sand it and work on it. We was in the garage all day. That was a nice day to be working on something like that.
So when the frames were, when there was a quilt on a frame, when you were around, the women, multiple women would work on the frame together and talk, or?
Yes, they worked on the frames and talked. And I remember quilting on my mother's quilts. I always liked to quilt. Always wanted to sew.
What's your earliest memory of sewing?
Sitting on my daddy's lap making a doll dress.
How'd that go?
I sewed all the way around. It didn't have any hole to put its arms through or its neck through or its feet through. He helped me cut it out. My mother was a sewing. She was probably making a dress or something. And I wanted to sew. My sister was a sewing. She had needle and thread and was a sewing. Mom was sewing on a sewing machine. And I wanted to sew. I wasn't very big. So he helped me cut me a doll dress out for one of my dolls. And he told me to put my needle down and go underneath and push it back up and then go back down and push it back up. And instead of sewing across the shoulders, and down the sides, each side, and I'd have my doll dress done. I sewed all the way around it. So I had to do it over. But I remember sitting there and him telling me how to do what it was. And it was at night. We were sitting around a stove in the living room. And I don't know. I think that's the first doll dress I ever made. We always had lots of doll babies to play with. Always wanted a doll every Christmas. And I usually got one. That's about all I got for Christmas was a doll and maybe some fruit and some nuts. And we never got lots of toys like the kids get today. We'd usually get one special thing. Sometimes we got clothes.
So as a child, you and your sister, you both made outfits for those babies?
Oh, we put in our time sewing doll clothes. In the summertime, we'd make us a doll. We'd make us a playhouse in the corn crib or in the wagon, in the shed or something. We'd make us a playhouse, and we always had scraps that we could sew for our doll babies. We'd clean out the brooder house and scrub it and make it all nice and clean, and then we'd make us a doll house in there. Then when they got the baby chicks in the fall, we'd have to move out. And we even had the brothers to sew them a little. They liked to sew too because they were younger. They had to do what we wanted to do. And it was just, we had a good life, a happy life at home. Very happy.
You spent some time with your grandmother growing up?
I would go to my grandmother's and stay maybe a week, maybe a 2 or 3 weeks. I enjoyed going to my grandmother's. She was special. And I guess she thought maybe we was special or she wouldn't want us to stay. And maybe we'd get a piece of material and she'd help me make a dress or that was after I was bigger and did know a little bit about sewing. She didn't keep us when we was little. We was big enough to help her in the house, wash dishes and maybe sweep and do things like that for her. But we played a lot while we was there too.
How did you come across your first thimble?
She got material for my dress. I think she paid a penny a yard for it. We walked to Morgan's one day. And she said I couldn't sew without a thimble. I had to learn to use a thimble. So we went to Morgan's. We got to come back. While we was there, she got me material for a dress. And she said, well, you need a thimble. So she bought me a thimble. And I was so really proud of it and got home and she showed me how to put it on. She showed me to push my needle through the material with my thimble and I wouldn't gouge my fingers. So I've sewed with a thimble ever since. I hate to sew, you don't even like sew a button on without a thimble. And I still have it, but it's got about 3 or 4 holes in the end where I've sewed so much with it. It has holes in the ends of it. I've wore out several thimbles.
So in school, you also had home economics.
In my 7th grade, well, we moved to Ohio when I was in the 7th grade. That was 1936 when we moved to Ohio. Daddy was working for some man on a farm. And so I went to the 7th grade and the 8th grade. in a little country school in Ohio. And it was the eighth grade I took home ec. I started started at the high school. And we had projects. Each year we had a cooking project. We would cook so much, so many meals, and we learned to can, and we learned anything that you do in a home. And then we sewed. Well, we had to take projects in the summertime because you had to get a credit, and it took summer and winter to get your credit. Anyway, I decided to take sewing for my project, and I made a quilt.
Tell me where the fabrics for that quilt came from.
I don't know. I don't know where I got the material. We bought it someplace, but I don't remember where we got it. I don't remember buying the material. But I know we bought it. And I decided to make a quilt and quilt it. So I pieced the quilt and appliqued it on the material, the background. And quilted it. I can't remember. But then I said, well, I'd make a quilt, I'd make a pair of pillows, which I made the pillows too. During the summer, we had geese. And I picked the keys. Of course, my grandmother and my mother helped me. And I made the down pillows. I got a pretty good grade on mine. And then I had to take it. I believe the home ec teacher come to our house and seen my project. She had to visit the girls and see their project that they had worked on. And I got a pretty good grade on it.
And the pattern of that quilt is
it's a Dresden plate. And it's just a circle. And it's a piece circle.
Once that quilt was finished, did you use it?
Well, I wore it out. We wore it out. It's getting pretty, it's pretty raggy, but I can't throw it away. It still has a place. And that it would have been, let's see, I must have been 6. We moved there in 36, 37, 38. I must have been about 38, 9 when I made my first quilt, 1938 and 39. So then I had to quit quilting too much. I went to school. I would quilt on my mother's quilts at home, my sister's quilts. If she was making one, I'd sit and quilt up with hers, on hers. But I didn't make any more quilts for a long time.
What did you do when you graduated high school?
I got married. I graduated high school in 42 and got married. I graduated in May, I think it was May the 21st, got married in July the 11th, 1942. So I wasn't home long after I got married. I knew I was lived in the country. I knew they didn't have money for me to go to school. So what could I do? And I'd met my husband. And when I was in the seventh grade. So I'd go on with him, and then we moved back and went back to West Virginia when I was after my first year of high school. We moved back to West Virginia, and I went to school, graduated, and we would write every once in a while, or they'd come, his family had come to our house in West Virginia a time or two. And then we sort of got, he went his way, I went mine. And I finished school. I sent him a graduation card when I graduated from high school. But we'd written letters in between, off and on. And when we first started going together, he would walk me to church when we went to church in Ohio. And we lived right next to the church. He'd come down, and we would either walk to church or else ride to church and with his mom and dad and their family. And
so he was from Ohio?
He lived in Ohio, yeah. But he was born in West Virginia, North Ravenswood.
Really?
And they moved, then they moved to Ohio. They had to build him a new house. Now, I ran across this in my pictures. They ran across, he got a birthday card. I don't know, since we've lived here, from his mother, and she told him the story of his birth. They lived down in Ravenswood, and they had built a house in North Ravenswood. They walked up the railroad track when they had one child, Mayford. They walked up the railroad track to the new house. They had moved. And she was pregnant. And that night or evening, he was born. And she said she was really, so I guess his dad went to get help and the doctor, and he was born that night after they walked up the road. And then they sold that place and moved to Ohio when he wasn't very big. They hadn't lived there long. His dad traded the house for a team of horses and part of the farm. And then they had bought the farm. I don't know how they got the farm, but they had the farm in Ohio, and that's where they moved. And
so when you made that first quilt, you already knew your husband-to-be?
I didn't know it was going to be my husband then.
Of course.
Didn't know that until I graduated from high school. It was about early spring when he began writing to me.
Now, he had a picture of you from 7th or 8th grade, right? And did
Yes.
his family suffer a loss?
Yes, they did. They lost their home. Where they moved to when he was a baby. And the house burned, and I think it was the flu where it caught. And they got a few things out, but not much out of the house. And all the kids were born. There was seven in his. He had all, was it seven brothers? Six brothers and one sister. And so his dad come out, and they didn't have any place to go, so they moved in the old schoolhouse where I went to school in the 7th grade. They wasn't having school there then, so they let them move in it, and that's where they lived until they built them another house.
Wow.
And let's see, they had the neighbors, I guess, come and helped move when they seen the fire. Anyway, when his dad come out after they had, the fire was probably still burning, but they couldn't get in, he handed my picture to Jimmy and said, "Here, I saved this." It was on the mantel, and he had saved it. So I still have it. And then it was after, it was a good while, a few years after that. I was in school, and the bus went across on one side of the river, and you could see their house on the other side of the river. So we seen where the fire was when we went to school that morning. Fires are bad.
Devastating, probably, to lose your home.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me like it would be. Mm-hmm. I think it would be terrible.
So then you moved back to West Virginia.
We was living in West Virginia when they had their fire.
Okay. But he was still in Ohio?
Uh-huh. He lived in Ohio. They lived in Ohio.
Okay.
And we lived in West Virginia.
Okay. How did you guys begin to correspond? How did you...
Well, we wrote letters a few times after we first moved back to West Virginia. We wrote letters for a while, and then we quit writing letters. I guess he went his way, I went mine. We wasn't close together. We was close together, but we didn't see each other until we was older. Mm-hmm. And he come up here to work. Or he moved his cousin up here. And the cousin didn't have money to send him back home. So he got a job, and he went to work. Well, I think he was only 17 or so, 17 or probably when he moved the people up here. And he got a job at the cement plant over in Fairborn, mowing grass. He wasn't old enough to work in the factory where they made the cement, but they would let him work and mow grass. Well, he took that job, and then the war was going on, and they was a hiring at the field, so he went to work at Wright-Patterson Airfield. They hired him before the war, while the war was going on, because they was hiring a lot of people. So he was working there, and his dad worked at the cement plant. And he said something about me, and so his dad said, well, why don't you write to her? So he wrote to me, and we started writing then, and that was in 41. And he come back down home, we dated a few times when he had a long weekend. We dated a few times, but not long till we were married.
How did you know that you would marry him?
I always thought a lot of him. I always thought. And I thought a lot of his family. They were a nice family. I don't know, I guess. I hadn't met anybody else. In fact, I was dating somebody when I was writing letters to him, but that didn't pan out.
Did he ask you to marry him?
Yes, he did.
How did that go?
He didn't get on his knees. We had gone to the show one night, and on the way home, there's a big tree, and we stopped at that big tree and talked, and sat there and talked a while, and he asked me to marry. And I didn't agree right the first thing, but I agreed soon after, you know.
Did you talk it over with your family? How did you tell them?
I eloped. They didn't know. They knew we were engaged. But he come on Saturday, and he come on Friday evening. And he was at my house overnight. he was allowed to stay back then because he couldn't get back across the river. The ferry quit running. So we got up the next morning and said we was going to Gallipolis. And we was taking Mayford and Wilma to Gallipolis, and they went with us to get married. So we picked them up and went to Gallipolis and was married in Gallipolis. And then went back home, scared to go home. But Mayford had told everybody before we got home, and we didn't get to tell. We didn't get to tell. Well, my grandmother wasn't, or they wasn't too happy, but they didn't say anything to us.
So from there, did you live at home for some time more?
No, we left on Sunday and come up here. We left on Sunday morning and come up here, and I thought to myself on the way, it was so hot, and we had a flat tire, maybe two flat tires, because you couldn't get tires then. You couldn't get lots of things because the war was going on. And so we come up here, and lived in the house where he was living when we got home. So that was our home. We come home.
Now, was he in the service?
No. That was in July. He went to the service in November of 1942. On our first Christmas, I didn't know where he was. Because that troop train had picked him up. He was stationed at Wright Pat for a little while. They said if he was working there, he'd be stationed there. Well, he was stationed there just a short few weeks. And when he left for service, he left from down home, from Pomeroy. And I stayed at my mother's. I was at my mother's, and then when he got stationed, sent back to the field, he called, and he was back at the field. So I come up here. I come back up here, and Dale sold papers in Fairborn. He was in grade school. I don't know, maybe fourth or fifth grade, and sold papers. And he come to the house and said, the troop train is loading, and says, Jim's on the troop train. He's getting on the troop train. Well, we went to the down from Fran Avenue down to the railroad to see the troops leaving, and he was already on the plane, on the train. That's when they shipped their troops by train. And his dad lifted me up, and he opened the train door, and he kissed me goodbye. And it was Christmas, just a few days, very few days before Christmas. And so I didn't know where he was. They didn't know where they were going. They didn't know where the train would end up. They didn't know at all where they would go.
What was your life like as a sort of new bride with a husband in the service? What did you do?
Well, I was up there. I got a job at the field.
Right, Pat?
Yes, but I didn't work but about maybe 2 months. And he was stationed at Biloxi, Mississippi, and he called. He was at Biloxi. And I could come. So I visited once or twice, and then I went and stayed. So I lived in Biloxi for nearly 2 years. And we had Jim while we lived down there. And I was away from home, having a new baby. And that was a pretty scary life part of the time. But, you know, I don't think I was as scared then as it would be if I was going away now to live, or off on a troop train and never ridden on a train. I'd never ridden on the bus. And then to start off that distance, that was a long trip. But I wanted to go, and he wanted me to come, so that's where I went.
Now, when you worked at Wright Patt, what was your position? What did you do?
I learned to solder lugs on wires. I think it was for lights that went on the airplanes, where they had people to just solder wires. Well, that's what they put me to doing. And we had to, no, it wasn't a very good life. But I didn't do it very long, so. Then after I went to Biloxi before I got pregnant, I worked in a restaurant. I made enough money in a week to pay my week's rent. So that's where my money went. I paid my rent. And, of course, I could eat at the restaurant where I worked. So we didn't have to buy food, very little bit of food. And he could live off base. He didn't have to be on base, so. It was good to be with him. I wouldn't have traded it for nothing. But I missed home. He missed home. We both missed home. I'm satisfied, but if he had to be in service, it was good to be with him.
How did you know that his service was coming to an end?
How did I know? Well, he never went overseas. He was lucky he had finished his... I had to come home when he was going to school because he wanted to know I was home, you know. And we had to save enough money for a ticket home from wherever we lived so I could get home. And he finished his ball tour, in Louisiana. He went to Louisiana while I was with him in Louisiana for a good while. And he was going to gunnery school. And he finished his gunnery school and was waiting to be shipped out when the war was over. And then they didn't take him, which he was lucky.
So you had one son at that
time? I had one son, and then I had a daughter in Louisiana. Well, I didn't have her in Louisiana. I come home. Something tickle. I come home and was living in Fairborn when my second baby was born. And she was born over in Dayton. But he was home on leave while I was, when I was expecting her, he'd figured his leave so that he could get a furlough. And so he was home with me when she was born. She was born in Dayton. And then he went back to service, and the war was over then. So, you know, he could get a furlough and be home. And then he had to go back. Then I think he went back to Florida, and he worked there until he was discharged.
So during that time?
And he was discharged in March. She was born in January, and he was discharged in March, I believe. No, I was in service. He was in service while she was... He was still in service while she was a baby.
So you lived in Ohio, and you had two youngsters, and he was in service in Florida. Was any of your family in Ohio? Who did you...
His dad lived... he lived with us. His dad lived with us and worked over there. And his mother was there part of the time.
And your family was still in West Virginia?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so when he came back from Florida and he was discharged from service, how did life proceed from there?
Well, we built a bigger house in Fairborn. In 18 months, I had another baby after he come from service. I had the two girls then and my son. And he was home, but he worked all the time. I don't know. He built houses. He went back to work. Finally went back to, he was going to draw some retirement, but, or what wouldn't be retirement. I don't know what it was he was going to draw, but they was hunting him a job, and so they got him a job on the railroad track, and he didn't want to work on the railroad. He was going back to the field to work. So he went back to the field to work after he was discharged. He worked at the field, and he built houses. He done any, worked all the time. So, now, when Melva was born, she was born in a car on the way to the hospital, so we didn't get to the hospital to get her. She and pulled back in her driveway, and a neighbor that lived right with us there in the same house, in a one side of the house, we lived in the other side. And she was there, and well, the baby had already been born, and the doctor come to the house, and I got up and walked out of the. He cut the cord and handed the baby to Verna, and she says, "What am I supposed to do with her?" She didn't know, and she had one child, and she had a boy just a little older than mine. A little, about the same age of mine, and then she was expecting. And this, her baby was born after mine. She says, "What am I supposed to do with her?" But we got along fine. And then we decided, he decided to build, he had a lot, he had bought a lot on the corner of Fran and South Central. So we built a house there, and then we come over here. We've lived here ever since. And that was 1951 when we come here.
So when you had this place, did you have some land, and you had four kids at that
we
time?
We bought 2 acres. We had 2 acres here. Mm-hmm. Now I still have the 2 acres mm-hmm. and the two houses. We bought that big house up there when we lived in the first house on my 2 acres. We bought that big house, went up for sale, and we bought it and lived there until the kids were all gone. After they left, he had had heart attacks, so he had had 2 heart attacks, and I said, "We don't need the steps to run up and down to the bathroom, and we don't need the house," and so we decided to sell it and built this house here, and I've lived here ever since.
So during the time that your children were young, there was definitely no time for quilting, but you did make some of their clothes.
I made all the biggest end of their clothes when they was in a grade school. Mm-hmm. I would get a piece of material or make maybe 2 or 3 dresses, and they all, 3 of the girls dressed, got a dress just alike, made just alike, off of the same pattern. I had the pattern so I could double it, and I would come up with a little difference from one dress, one of their dresses, you know, not separate. They all had the same little decoration on them, and I puckered the hem up and tied a little ribbon up here, made a buttonhole, and tied a little ribbon, so that made a little. They remember their dresses. And after they got in high school, then they had some bought clothes, but they still had homemade clothes. And they sewed, would make some of their dresses.
They sewed with you?
Mm-hmm.
Did they make any baby doll clothes?
Not as many as I made. They always had dolls, but they just didn't seem to have time to sew dolls. I can't remember making much doll clothes, but I made doll clothes for their dolls. I made doll clothes for my dolls. I've made doll clothes for my grandkids' dolls.
So you mentioned I think this is by the time everyone had moved out, the kids had flown from the nest. Your husband would take care of the dishes.
Well, that was after the kids were gone, and I was working. I worked at school in the cafeteria. I cooked at school and worked at McKinley School. And then I'd come in from work, and we worked, I think, about 7 hours a day. And I would fix supper, and then he would say, well, if I had a quilt, was working on a quilt and had one in the frame, well, you can go quilt. I will clean up the kitchen. He done a better job cleaning up the kitchen than I did. He done a good job. And he would cook some. But and if he had company during the day, he'd fix a meal for them, like his sister or someone had come. And the girls got so then they'd come every, I don't know, they would come for lunch. They was working in Xenia or Yellow Springs or someplace. The two of them would come for lunch, and he'd fix lunch for them. And he always cleaned up after he fixed lunch for them.
Do you remember what inspired you to make your first quilt after the kids left? It was an applique quilt, right?
It was an applique quilt. I don't remember what it was. I know which one it is, but I don't remember the name. I just always liked to quilt, and I had some quilts, made some quilts while I was still working, two or three. And I just always liked to do it. That's what I learned to do, and I like to do it. And I take them to school and show them to the girls that I worked with. I made two or three. I know the garland of roses. I'm not sure, but I think I had made that while I worked. And I made the first one while I worked, that I made the applique one.
How did you find the quilt patterns?
I bought the kits from Hirschman catalog. I'd order a kit, and then I'd sit down and make it. In fact, I've ordered all of them. All my applique ones I ordered, and all my cross-stitch ones I've ordered. But the ones that are pieced, I just get the pattern out of one of my quilt books, and cut out the patterns would be there. And I've got books down there that's quilt books. I've got that box right sitting over there, that's full of quilt magazines I wouldn't throw away, because there's quilt patterns in them. It just, I couldn't throw them books away. I still get them out and look at them. And the ones that are pieced, I pieced. And the biggest part of them I pieced by hand. I've pieced one or two partly by on the sewing machine, but I'd rather sit. I like sew by hand rather than sitting down and piecing things on a sewing machine. I don't like that.
So you went through a process of making a few applique quilts and a few pieced quilts, and your mom was also quilting, and she was doing some piecework. Was she still in West Virginia at this time?
Yes, she lived in West Virginia, and my daddy had died. She lived by herself. He died, I don't remember how many years. I've got it down in there. I don't remember what. I think it was in the 70s when he died, 70s. So. And she lived by herself, and she had to. She done quilts then, because she could see to sew, and that helped her pass her time, and So she gave her quilts away. I'm too stingy to give mine away. I guess I will someday. But I haven't given any of mine away, except my babies, my great-grandbabies' quilts. I've made quilts for them. I've made a quilt for each one of them.
So in some of those quilts that you and your mother made, especially the ones that she pieced and you quilted...
Well, she would give me, she gave me a top. After we was married, she had one partly done. And I asked her, I said, Mom, could I have that quilt if I finish it? And she said, yes. I think it was a fan quilt, if I remember. I think it was my fan quilt that... I don't think you got a picture of it. I finished it and kept it for years before I ever quilted it, long time before I ever quilted it. In fact, I think I had two-piece tops that she had given me that I just folded up and put away, and one of them might have been the, I don't know whether it was my snowball. Mm-hmm. Could have been the snowball that I pieced at the years after she had given me the top.
She gave you a Lone Star quilt. When was that? The pink and white Lone Star.
Well, I think she gave that to me. It would have been after while we was living up at the house, the big house up there, is the year she gave it to me, and I don't think we moved. I don't know what year we lived there. I'd have to get out paperwork or stuff to figure out when we lived there. So it's in the 60s. It would probably be around the 60s when she gave it to me.
And then she gave you another, is it a double wedding ring or a Dresden for Christmas? It's colorful.
She gave me the star quilt. That was for Christmas one year. She gave me the Dresden plate. Was that the one I finished?
I think so. You had to do some fancy quilt work. Oh, that was a star. That was actually a flower quilt.
Yeah. Turn it off. Let me think a minute. Well, that's the reason I make the quilts, to have a piece of the dresses. If I'd kept all the pieces I'd made for the girls when they was little, I'd had lots more. But somehow or other, I don't know what happened to all my scraps. But some of them is pretty old, some of the pieces.
Well, your grandmother's quilt, the feed sack quilt, the nine patch, is made of feed sacks, and we talked about that those were from, you know, those were real feed sacks that were saved and used. But in some of the other quilts, there's also a lot of dresses, some of your grandmother's and your mother's dresses, and then later on in your own work, there are your dresses. What do you think the significance of using scraps and reusing fabric from clothing? What's the significance of that? It's not all contemporary quilt makers do that these days.
I think it's nice to think back of the dresses they had made out of the material. You can lay down on a quilt and lay there and look at the different dresses and think of different people. And who had a dress off of that piece of material, and maybe how the dress was made, maybe the pattern they used. It's interesting. That brings back memories of people that's long gone. And that means a lot to a person after they've been gone for years. That
sure does.
It brings back memories that happened when you was little. Some of them when you were little.
And seeing your own fabric in your own quilts probably brings back memories of certain.
You look back and you think of dresses you made for certain girls. Or yourself, or, you know, it just, things that nobody can take them away from you. You remember them.
Mm-hmm. So the first quilt that you made, the first kit that you ordered was an applique quilt called Progress. Do you have any thoughts on making that quilt? Did that kind of open up a whole new world for
that
you?
Opened up a whole new world, and I thought, will I ever get it done? How do I do it? And I got my kit and opened it up and went through it, and I thought, all the little pieces was on different pieces of material, and you had to cut them out far enough so you would have you could turn the edges down around, and you had to decide which piece was to be put down first because you had to put each piece or it wouldn't be right. And so I had to work on it. I had a lot of studying to do when I first made the first one, the first applique. Because I'd never applicated like a quilt, and one maybe there'd be four or five pieces, one piece on top of the other piece before, and I would piece, cut them out, and have enough to turn under a little bit, and I'd baste around that, then I'd baste around. Then I would pin them or sew or baste them to my, just depends on what kind of a piece, what shape piece it was, whether I pinned it on or whether I basted it on before I applicated it. I was a good while making it.
When you do the applique, do you turn it under with your needle as you go?
No, well, if there's a little place that's not basted, I usually do take my needle and tuck it under. And
how do you baste it?
How do I baste it? Well, I just make a bigger stitch than it would make if I was appliquing it.
So you would fold the edges under and baste it down?
Mm-hmm.
Would you iron the edges down?
Not really. I could just fold them down and kind of do it with, press them with my fingers. Press them down. And they'd usually stay enough that I could sew. But it was easier if I did baste them. And I basted most of them.
So you've made a number of applique quilts. There's a garland of roses. There's the tree of life. There is the
magnolia.
Purple, mm-hmm, the magnolia, but the purple one is all appliqued. The purple one is called Daisy.
Wild Daisies, I believe. That's not it. That's it.
Wild Daisy. Do any of those quilts stick out in your mind?
They all stick out in my mind, but the one you're working on is the prettiest. Every one you work on is the prettiest. Now, I don't know why, and it's The Tree of Life, that was a hard one. Wild Daisies was a pretty one. It was a hard one. Especially the center. And I usually start on the edge or the border around the edge of it and kind of get a hang of it. And by the time you get to the harder part, then it's easier.
The Tree of Life, there's a lot of embroidery.
There's a lot of embroidery on it. But now they sell the Tree of Life that's, I don't know if it's cross-stitch or if it's embroidery. I was looking through a magazine the other day, or a book here the other evening, and it's a cross, either cross-stitch or embroidery, I don't know which it is. But it's a Tree of Life. They don't have that one in the book anymore. So...
The Garland of Roses, or which is this? Garden Treasures. Also, actually, it is the Garland of Roses. Has a lot of embroidery as well on the flowers. Very detailed.
Mm-hmm. There's some of them has a lot of embroidery on it.
So what's your process? You first do the piecework?
You do the piecework first. Then I usually... I don't remember how I did do that, but I must have, when I do run rows, I'd probably embroider it at the same time.
At the same time you applique?
After I'd get that rose done, then I would do my embroidery work on it and go to the lees. Maybe I'd make 3 or 4 lees, and then I'd do embroidery work on them. Before I left this corner piece, I'd have all my embroidery work done on it. And even the little ones, I would do them. Because it was too easy to miss a spot that needed to be embroidered. So I'd do one rose, embroider it, 2 or 3 leaves, and embroider them if they were right together. This up here, it's been a long time since I made that one.
So, over time, you have created a pretty serious body of work. I mean, you have made a lot of heirloom quality quilts. What do you think? What does quilting mean to you? I mean, how would your life be different if you didn't have this craft?
I'd get pretty bored here by myself if I didn't have something to work on. And I enjoy sewing more than anything else. I read some, but I enjoy sewing. Sewing passes the time for me. And when you're here by yourself, you have to do something. You have to have some kind of a hobby to pass time. And when you make something you're proud of, you like to show it to people. And I like to take my quilts down to church, have them on the table up front for a month or so.
How did that begin?
They asked me at church, and they decided, one of the ministers decided that it would be nice to put a quilt on the table up front. And so they asked who had quilts. I said, well, I've got a quilt. So I'll bring one. So I took one down, and they all liked it, and they took pictures of some of mine. It was on the pulpit. I ran across pictures in there. And someone asked me at church a week or two ago if I didn't have a quilt I could bring. I said, I'm working on one. So this one will probably go to church when I get it done. You like to show them to people. And it helps to pass your time. What would I do here? all the time if I didn't have my song today.
Do you feel like some quilts still challenge your skills? Do you still learn more as you quilt?
Well, yes, you learn a little bit every year, every time you make one. And I had, I don't know. This one has been the hardest. If my eyes holds out, I guess I'll quilt all my days, as long as my eyes hold out. Because I've had cataract surgery in both my eyes. And I don't see as good as I did. I don't make as good as small stitches as I used to make.
Well, you sure thread a needle quick, and your stitches look great to me. It's beautiful work. So today in home economics, they don't necessarily...
They don't teach stuff like they did back then. The schools doesn't. They've taken so much out of school, and I think they need it. Because I've got granddaughters, or let's call them granddaughters-in-law, that don't sew a button on. My grandson brings these shirts up here every once in a while and wants a button sewed on them. And I've done mending for them, you know. Maybe sew on buttons or sew up a hole or something. I've even put a patch on for them. But they don't teach that anymore. They don't teach that lot of stuff that they should.
What do you think is lost when, you know, entire generations don't learn either basic skills or hobbies, art?
There'll be a lot of things they've lost. I don't know. Maybe they won't know they've lost it. Maybe they'll all be gone by then. Great-grandkids growing up, I wonder, will they be sewing? Will yours? When they grow up?
I hope so.
Well, I hope you teach it, too. Because if you don't, they're missing something.
A sense of a job well done, if nothing else.
Yeah. And I'm proud of every one of mine. Someday I hope my kids are.
Pretty sure they already are. So other than the quilts that you have made for grandkids to give away as gifts, you pretty much have all of the quilts that you've made.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that.
Well, I could give the kids a quilt, but I want them taken care of. And if I gave them to them, and they had them on their bed, and a dog happened to jump up on them, that would hurt my feelings to think of the hours I had put in working on that. And then a dog or a cat jump up on my bed, up on their bed. And I couldn't stand that. So I decided I would wait until I wasn't I went around to see my quilts abused. I didn't want one of them abused. Not one of them. Even a little old 9 patch or 4 patch. And I'd think of all the hours I put in piecing it and quilting it. I think they'd take better care of them than that, but it would hurt my feelings if they didn't. And I don't want to see them. So I thought, well, I could give one away. I could give 4 of them away. They'd make nice Christmas presents, but I don't know how I'd decide which one to part with or which one to give which. they've told me, Mother, you just sit down and decide which one goes where. I can't yet. Maybe someday I will be able to. But so far I haven't decided. And it just, I don't know. I don't know how they'll decide. But they're just, it'll be hard.
So your quilts here, you rotate them on your bed sometimes.
I have flower gardens on my two front beds now. Augie and me, or Michael and me, decided we'd put different quilt on. And here we all had them all bagged up and put away, but the flower gardens. So we put the flower garden on each bed, each of the front beds. I didn't change mine. I changed the two front beds. I said, well, that's kind of winter. They're dark. Just put them on. So that's the ones we put on. We had the rest of them put away. And we wasn't long getting them put away. But I said, well, since they're out, we'll just have them.
Tell me how do you keep them? How do you store them, your quilts?
I just fold them up and stick them up a spot where I've got a place. I usually put them in pillowcases, mainly the white ones. And fold them, put them up in the closet, up in the top of the closet. And some, I've got a quilt rack in there, and I hang two or three on it and leave them out when you can get in my bedroom, in the front bedroom.
Do you think that seeing the wear on the quilt that you made while you were still in school sort of brought you to your thinking about your quilts? Most of them, they have not been washed at all, right?
I have washed one of mine. One that I've made. Now I've washed the ones that my mother gave. Well, I've washed one of them that Mom gave me. But I don't usually use hers. I fold them up and put them away, too. So I guess they'll be listed right in with mine. But I think they will know which ones that she made. Because they have been used. The ones that she has given me mostly, except the star. Now, I haven't used it on my beds, but some of them that she'd give me a long time ago, I've used them. I've used them a lot. But when you have blankets, you don't use your quilts. Maybe put one quilt over top of a blanket. But some of them, I've got one in there on the bed now that, well, the one my grandma made is on my bed. And it's been washed several times. But it held up pretty good. And every stitch of it is by her hand. I don't know how many more I'll make. I guess maybe that's the reason I was looking at the catalog the other night. When I get this one done, I won't have nothing to work on except my pieces sitting around, and I'll try to piece some. I might piece some on a sewing machine. Who knows? I might just cut some squares out and sew them together and piece them. Maybe I'll knot a quilt. I've never knotted a quilt. And it might be nice to knot a quilt.
Might switch it up a bit.
Yeah, that might change it, but I don't know. I guess you could put it on the frames to knot it, couldn't you?
I think so. You have to baste it out somehow, right?
Well, you just take great big stitches, and you'd almost make it in squares, wouldn't you? And just sew squares of material together and then put a knot in each block.
Mm-hmm. The corner of each block or something? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When, well, if your squares are small enough, you could put it in the middle of
right.
of the square, but you'd have different batten on, in your quilt. Mm-hmm. It would be a heavier batten,
mm-hmm.
and you wouldn't wash it. Well, I guess you'd wash it. But people used to knot lots of quilts.
Yeah. A lot of log cabins and things were tied.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hmm. we talked about one thimble. Did you get another thimble? The one thimble was a gift from your grandmother when you guys went.
Oh, I've had many thimbles. Yeah. I've wore out two or three or four thimbles, mm-hmm. made holes in the ends of them.
Mm-hmm.
And my finger's not very big.
Mm-hmm.
A thimble don't fit. So when I'd wear out one, I'd have another one and I'd fall back on it. I don't know how many thimbles I've had in my time. I've had lots of them. Mm. And then my thimble I'm using now is the one I got for a what do I want to say? When I went to Michael and Stacy's wedding, I wanted a souvenir, and we went through a store that had all kinds of different things that you could buy, and I bought me a silver thimble. I said, I've never had a silver thimble. Mine's all been just thimbles that holes come in. I'm going to buy that silver thimble. And it's pretty shiny, isn't it?
It's lovely.
It's got a little ridge around the edge of it right along there.
It's beautiful.
And it's easy to separate from the other old thimbles I've had. So,
that's a nice thimble.
I'm proud of that thimble.
And tell me more about your frames. I think I got some of the story earlier, but the frame that you are working on right now is made by your husband and yourself out in the
garage.
Mm-hmm.
And we went. You didn't get that story?
I did get that story, I think.
Yeah. Well, we got the pattern off of the frames that my mother had given me. After she quit quilting, I asked her if I could have her quilt. If she would let me have her quilting frames. Well, yes, you can have them. So I have them up in the garage, and we took a pattern off of them so they would... I would have them bigger than fit quilts now, rather than just a regular quilt that wasn't made very big when they didn't have big beds.
Well, it seems to me that you don't have a regular frame and you don't have any regular quilts. It's all just excellent.
Well, I'm proud of my frames. I wouldn't take nothing but the frame, but when my daughter come out and helped me put my first quilt in this frame, she says, Mother, I'm going to write down on these frames, you bequeath these frames to Helen. So it's written on it's written on these frames, on this long, one of these long pieces. She says, when you're done with them, I want them. Now, I don't know whether the other girls will want them or not, but she can loan them. They can all three use them because they're not going to have a quilt in the frame at the same time. So I suppose that's on this, so on these frames. I said, well, somebody could get them little old frames up in the garage. They could have them too. That would be, they'd be big enough to make the baby's quilts. The great-grandbaby's quilts or... my great-great-grandbaby's quilts. They'd have to put new cloth on the frames, fasten. And I use safety pins. I bought safety pins to pin my... I used to go down and sew my lining to the I don't know what you call this.
Muslin
lining. And then I seen where they had safety pins that you could pin your quilts to the muslin. So I ordered me some of them. And they are, I have them pinned. They're in that little white box right there. And I put them all about this close together on both sides. And then I pin my, I don't pin the batten, but I pin the quilt top to that on this side. I don't fasten that side. And that's how I keep them fastened to my frames. But they have to be fastened pretty tight so you can roll them. But I've used pins the last 2 or 3 years. 3 or 4 years, maybe. Safety pins. And they are a different shape safety pin than the... Do you use pins?
I do have some safety pins that are sort of bent.
Yeah. That's the ones. They have a crook in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the ones I have. And it makes it lots faster. And it works okay, but it works just as good as a sewing, but it don't take us quite as much time. And I usually use a darning needle when I would sew my lining in. I'd use a darning needle and maybe crochet thread. And that would be strong enough to hold them where you wanted them. Mm-hmm. You got them started to be rolled.
Right.
I don't think I mentioned the safety pins.
Mm-mm.
And how I fastened my quilts in.
Mm-mm. Glad we got that. Is there any other thing that you can think about from, you know, some significance of a particular quilt or maybe a phase in your life of quilt making that was, you know, memorable or different than another? Any other sewing gear that has significance?
Well, that's my sewing machine. Jimmy got me my first sewing machine. I don't know where we come up with the first sewing machine. I don't know where I got my first sewing machine. It was a treadle machine. My mother always had a treadle machine till she decided she wanted an electric sewing machine. And one time, my old sewing machine my treadle machine that I always sewed on, I don't know where I got it. And I don't remember my first one. But I'll have to think on that. One Christmas, the only thing I'd like to have for Christmas is a sewing machine. I'd really like a sewing machine. And that was there went a rabbit, a bird, a big bird. He passed
right outside the window?
Right outside.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like an owl or something.
Wow.
Anyway, I said one year, well, I really need a sewing machine because my sewing machine's not working very good. Well, the kids were, Lucy was a baby then, and so that would have been about 52 or 53. And so Jimmy bought me a sewing machine for Christmas and had it hid over there when we had the store, had it hid. He had piled... They delivered it. He piled toilet paper around it, all around it in the store. And I didn't know it was there. I worked in the store every day, but I didn't move the toilet paper. And there was my sewing machine. So I had a new sewing machine, and that was about 51 or 52. Well, I've had a different head put on it. But that one that I've got on there now, I've had it I don't know how many years. And it's a Singer. It's a Sears and Roebuck. And then my mother gave me her sewing machine. I have it in the bedroom. and it's a Singer. And it still sews. I wouldn't take anything from a sewing machine. I said I'd rather have a sewing machine as a cook stove, because I'd rather sew as cook.
Even me both.
I'd rather sew anytime as cook. But that's where my first electric, now that, and I got electric sewing machine. Well, my mother had her treadle machine, and we was down home one day, my daughter and me, the youngest one and me, we'd go home in the summertime and stay a week or two. And after she was, well, she was just in grade school, her and me decided to go down home. Jimmy'd let us go every summer for a week or two, and I'd stay. And she had a treadle sewing machine before she got that one that I have in there. And Lucy said to her one day, says, "Grandma, can I have that sewing machine?" And she said, "Well, yeah, I guess you can." So when she gave it to her before she died, so she brought it home. Well, she was still at home when she gave it to her. And she had it in her room up at the house and kept it. Well, she still has it. She doesn't sew on it, but it sews. It sews good. I used to go upstairs and sit down and sew on it a good bit, but she never sewed on a treadle. She couldn't. She just didn't sew on a treadle machine. And she still got it, and got the scarf that she had made to put on it. It had drawers on each side, and it was I think it's a Singer. It still sews good. She wouldn't take nothing for the grandma sewing machine. I'm glad she gave it to her. But
you're a master threader. Well, Juanita, I think between talking through the quilts the other day and recording everything we said then, and I think between that and everything we said today, I probably have enough to work with to make something quite interesting.
You think you do?
I think so.
Oh, don't put stuff in there that you shouldn't.
What shouldn't I?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I will be mindful. Is there anything else you would like to mention about your quilts?
I don't know. I'm proud of every one of them, and every one I make is the prettiest. Every last one I make is the prettiest. Even my son will come along. "Did you quilt any today, Mother?" He will call. "Have you been quilting today?" But now, I've never seen him sit down with a needle and thread. He brings his stuff up here to get it mended. I usually tell him, "Well, I quilted a little, didn't quilt much." So. And the girls has never sat down and quilted a stitch on this one. They have never offered. Not a stitch have they quilted on this one, any of them.
Any of them?
Any of them. Now, Lucy usually sits down, the youngest girl, Lucy usually sits down and quilts a little bit. Just a little. I've got to quilt a little bit on this one. She's quilted on part of them, but not all of them. Just maybe a little. Just a little. But now Barb has never quilted, and I asked her the other day, "What are you going to do when you retire?" She's thinking about retiring. "What are you going to..." That's the oldest one. "What are you going to do when you retire?" "I don't know. I've got lots of closets to clean and rooms to clean and things to do and stuff to sort." I said, "You're not going to have a hobby like quilting or painting?" She paints some. She took painting classes. you could paint. I says, you have to have something to do because you get done, you get tired cleaning after so long a time. And she said, well, you never taught me how to quilt. I said, I didn't teach anybody how to quilt. They just know. Well, she has never quilted. I don't think she's ever sat down and quilted any. She said, but she likes to sew, so I don't know if she'll ever quilt or not. And Melva, I don't know. She don't have time. She's got two little boys that her and Grandpa had to take shopping yesterday, she told me this morning. She called when I was trying to get around this morning, and she was at work and said she met Grandpa and the two little boys over some Target or someplace, and they're the ones that's in your little girl's class.
It's enough to keep anybody busy, huh?
So that she's so busy with them boys, all three of them. And the older one, he's busy too. So they're all busy.
Busy boys.
I don't know how she works and keeps on the run with them. So I don't know whether she'll ever quilt or not. But she likes to sew, but she don't have time either.
Mm-hmm. If somebody came and sat, and would you have an extra needle and thread and thimble and show them how to do, or would they have to have their own piece to practice on?
Oh, I've got extra needles laying here. I've got a needle up and down. If I go up there and don't have a needle, I can always thread it. I think I put two needles out. And I've got package up there, it's got a couple needles in. Melva sews with too long a needle, though. She gets great big long needles. Mm. I have to have little short ones.
That's lovely. Well, Juanita, thank you so much for bringing me into your home and showing me all of your wonderful, wonderful quilts. It's an amazing body of work, and you most definitely should be proud.
I am proud of everyone, and I just like when that man asked me the other day how much I'd take for one of them. I wouldn't sell them. I wouldn't sell. I'd have to get, really have to have the money before I would sell. And I don't know if I could sell them then or not. I know my grandmother Shockey used to have quilts, and she, after Grandpa died, she lived by herself a long time and had a kind of and didn't have any income. She sold a lot of her work. She done a lot of embroidery work, pretty embroidery work. And she sold a lot of it to have money to live on. And I think she sold her quilts. She had stacks of quilts upstairs when we'd go there. She had stacks of quilts that she'd made, and she done good work. I think that's where I got it from, my grandparents and my mother, because both my grandparents quilted and embroidered. They loved embroidering, especially Grandma Shockey. Now, Grandma Reardon didn't embroidery as much as Grandma Shockey, but Grandma Shockey had the prettiest, and she had scarves all over everything, and it was embroidered so pretty. In fact, I've got a little set of, let me go get them. I'll go get some.
I think I've got an apron that she made, too.
My grandmother, Shockey.
Grandmother Shockey is the same one that made the nine-patch quilt?
No.
Oh, this is a different
Daddy's mother.
Oh, okay. Oh, my goodness, is that beautiful.
Now, them was Grandma Shockey's. And I'm satisfied she made them. But now, see, and she embroidered, too. She done lots of embroidery work.
It's lovely. Lovely, lovely.
I think these was... I know these come from her house. They're all stained up.
Oh, they're lovely.
I wouldn't use them. I just keep them put away. And then I went to her house one time to help her clean house. And she had done a lot of laundry and washed a lot of her doilies and things. And so my job was to iron. And she heated her irons on the stove. And then, well, I didn't know. I knew how to iron, but I didn't know how to iron her embroidery to suit her. She was particular. She wanted to iron a certain way. Now she says, Juanita, Wani, you always iron. Now, when you iron your embroidery work, you iron it on this side, and it was starched. You iron it on the wrong side and then that makes your pattern, your embroidery work stand up pretty. And then she says you iron the rest of it with, I didn't iron these. You iron the rest of it with on the top side, and that makes your material look shiny and pretty. That's the way she wanted to iron. Well, the big scarves was okay to iron that way, but the little ones, and it does make them pretty. And she starched them. Everything was, all the doilies was starched stiff. I remember that. I don't know how old I'd be, probably 15 or so, 16. But that's what she told me, which works good. And she made lots of knots. What do you call them?
Is it called candle wicking?
No, this is not candle. This is, it isn't candle.
The knots?
You call them French knots.
French knots, okay.
French knots is what she called them. And she made lots of them.
It's lovely. It gives it such three-dimensionality.
Mm-hmm. And the embroidery work, she done the embroidery work well. Mm-hmm. I've done scars with a little bit of embroidery work on.
Is this embroidery or is this crochet?
This is crochet. She's mm-hmm. made... She's made all of them, and she cut these things out, and then she punched her needle down through there and went around it once.
It's amazingly intricate.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she's cut them out and done them.
It's lovely. So lovely.
I think I've got an apron in there that she made. Hmm. And it's got embroidery. She always, both my grandmothers wore aprons.
Absolutely lovely.
I think they're pretty too.
Clearly you have something creative running through your family.
I hope it just goes on down the generation.